You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back, everybody, to the second hour of tonight's live broadcast of TPC. I'm James Edwards. This Saturday, June the 24th, and as we've mentioned earlier, we're currently in the middle of a two-week mini-series during which we're showcasing select individuals who either attended or addressed a variety of dissident conferences that have bloomed throughout this glorious summer. You just heard from Mark Weber, who shared a tale of his recent trip to not just Estonia, but also to the Netherlands, Belgium, and Austria. But that's not all. Program favorite, Roger Devlin, author of Sexual Utopia and Power, The Feminist Revolt Against Civilization. He's also back with us tonight and back with us right now to share details about his own recently completed multi-nation speaking tour of Europe. And as we go from one esteemed scholar to the next, Roger, welcome back to TPC.
Thank you. Thank you, James. Glad to be here.
Now, I got to tell you, folks, Roger, go ahead, Roger.
I was a month in Europe. I was at the Tallinn conference with Mark Weber. I was in Stockholm, and I was at a private countercurrents gathering with some tourism in between. So I got a lot to talk about with you.
Well, we're going to try to get to as much of it as we can. We couldn't get to enough of it with Mark in the first hour. I really wanted to focus a little bit more. We talked a little bit, of course, about his conference in Estonia, the Skansen Forum in Estonia, where he spoke. But I wanted to talk a little bit more about his visits to the Netherlands, Belgium, and Austria, and the conversations with the writers and political figures and activists that he met in those countries. But time did not permit, and so we'll get to as much as we can with the time we've got with you, my friend. But I got to tell you, folks, before we start with Roger, Roger is a rock star. Now, I'm not kidding you when I say that. You can find Mark Weber's speech that he gave at the Tallinn conference for free, and you can certainly listen to TPC for free. But if you want to hear Roger's speech, you got to pay $5 at Odyssey. And that's not by Roger's doing. That's just because that's just the nature of of his celebrity.
Somebody put it on Odyssey with a $5 charge to listen. I understand that a free version is going to come out in the next couple of weeks. All the conference videos will be made free eventually by the conference organizer, but only a few are out so far.
I kid you. I kid you, my friend. But coming up, we actually did post Mark's speech to thepoliticalcesspool.org back a couple of days ago, so check that out. At the same event that Roger is about to give us some details about. And then Roger's speech in Stockholm, there is a transcript of the speech that he gave there, which will be up on our website in a couple of days. So check it out. It'll complement his appearance tonight. But first, let's go back to Estonia, Roger. That was the first stop on your tour as well. Let's talk about what you talked about.
Yes, well, some highlights for me were getting to meet Ed Dutton. Some of your listeners must know about him. He's got a wonderful site called The Jolly Heretic. He's an Englishman who lives in Finland. And if you want to keep up with the cutting edge of the science of human diversity, he's a really good guy to follow. I reviewed several of his books, but I got to meet him in person, as Mark did too, for the first time in Tallinn. Ruben Kalep, who has spoken at American Renaissance in person once and by video link once, was also there. He was our Estonian host, the one local speaker, and he gave a wonderful talk too. And I was privileged to spend a couple of days with Ruben in southern Estonia after the conference, which was a very interesting experience. He knows the history of his country deeply and thoroughly, and he was taking me to archaeological sites, you know, places where medieval kings of Estonia used to rule from, and I got to visit Tartu, the university city, which is the university, Estonia's major university, is the oldest European university that far north in Europe. I think it goes back to the 15th century. That was a wonderful place to visit. Toured around southern Estonia. Southern Estonia is an interesting region. It actually has its own language. That's something not many Americans know. But it has its own language related to but distinct from standard Estonian. It's a very conservative region. Rubin's conservative political party gets its strongest support from southern Estonia. So I was delighted to be able to spend over a week in that region as well as seeing the capital, Tallinn.
I was looking at photos from both Tallinn, as I was mentioning with Mark in the previous hour, just this wonderful medieval city that still holds all of that power. And the hotel that this Skansiform was at really just fit in with the whole aesthetic. And then Cyan with Countercurrents was sending me some pictures of the local scenery there at where the Countercurrents conference was held, which we'll talk about in a moment.
Yeah.
We talked about it last week with one of its participants, so we'll talk about it with you as well. But I just looking at these pictures, Roger, the whole idea of blood and soil is very real. I mean, we are here to fight for our people and our land, and seeing some of these beautiful, beautiful the architecture and scenery and the mountains and the stone, there was just something about that. I said to Cyan, these pictures remind us of what we're fighting for. I mean, did you get a feel of that? I mean, you're an American, I'm an American, Mark's an American.
Absolutely.
You go from here to there. When you go over there, do you feel rejuvenated just by being? Does it stir your ancestral memory?
Oh, sure. It's the Estonians are a very ancient people. They're actually mentioned by Tacitus back writing in the first century A.D., and yet they never had their own state until after the First World War. They'd always been dominated for a time by the Germans, for a time by the Swedes, and then for a long time by Imperial Russia before gaining their independence in 1920, and then, of course, came the long Soviet occupation. So they're very jealous of their independence, I can, as a patriot myself, I can only wish them well. About 30% of the population is Russian, but they don't have any imperial designs on
the
Estonians.
Let's talk about that, Roger, if you don't mind. And I have nothing. I want to say this very clearly. It seems as though most in our movement, I mean, at least here in the United States, seem to be sympathetic to the Russian side of the Russia-Ukraine, Washington-NATO conflict. And then I have nothing but the utmost respect for Reuben Kaalep, who you just mentioned, who is an Estonian.
Right.
And not only that, he was a young man, very young guy, who is a dynamic speaker, a wonderful representative for our cause. And he has been elected to the Estonian parliament, and he sees it a very different way. And that's interesting to me. And with Estonia being such a relatively new country and with it having a lot of Russian admixture, what do you think is going on there with vis-a-vis this situation?
Well, I think the situation is structural. Russia is simply an enormous country. It stretches across 13 time zones. Estonia is very small. I don't think the Estonian people have any hostility toward the Russian people as such. And the Russians, the Russians themselves living in Estonia are not typically chauvinistic or even necessarily Putin supporters. But everybody there, it's understandable. There's a psychology of a small country that's always been under the thumb of a much larger country. And I think that's all that's really going on there. The people are not anti-Russian. You hear Russian spoken on the streets in Tallinn quite a bit. It's normal. People seem to get along more or less.
Well, I'm certainly anti-American as a Southerner, so I can get that to some extent. But I mean, I guess they have to understand that Putin's different than Stalin, right? I mean, this is definitely a new sheriff in town.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. Everybody in Estonia is very sympathetic toward the Ukrainian people. Having suffered under Soviet domination, they're quite sympathetic, not necessarily to the Ukrainian government, but to the Ukrainian people suffering this invasion. And there are plenty of Ukrainian flags all around Estonia.
Interesting. It's fascinating to me. And, they have a different history. We talked about this with Mark. I can't relate to that, and so I can't I'm not passing judgment or saying that I'm right and they're wrong or they're right or whatever. But it is interesting being so close to Russia and being such a new country. But in any event,
yes.
Let's get back quickly to the Skansa Forum there in Estonia. Both you and Mark were there. Mm-hmm. Jared would have been there. I guess I should ask you. I should have asked Mark this too. Was there any trepidation? Did any of you consider that maybe you might not get there?
No, I don't think anybody experienced any trouble except for Jared. Some of our attendees were disappointed because some of them actually came mainly because they wanted to meet Jared Taylor.
He's that guy.
Very much.
But, I mean, you cast a pretty big shadow, too, as does Mark. I mean, y'all could have been nabbed, maybe not the average attendee, but you could have been turned away.
We were the American delegation. And of course, Frody spoke, and we had an Italian speaker. We had quite a variety.
Well, we've talked a little bit about what Estonia looks like, and especially that capital city. Just give us a couple of minutes here, Roger, on the content of your speech there at the Skansa Forum, and then we're going to move on to one of your next stops.
Well, again, as with Mark, it was a kind of a, I guess the theme was the darkness before the dawn. I am hopeful in the long run for our people, but we've got a very – the saying that it's darkest before the dawn is not just an old cliche. It really happens this way often. Like a good historical analogy would be the worst persecution of the Christian church under the Roman Empire occurred in the years immediately preceding the conversion of Constantine. The authorities saw the growing power of this church, and they were worried, and they thought, well, we got to clamp down on it before it's too late. And for several years they did, but it was too late, and the church triumphed. And I kind of have the feeling that our people ultimately will triumph, although things are likely to get worse in the short run. I talked to the attendees about the situation in America and how bad it is right now.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, nobody has any illusions about the current trajectory and the trends as they exist right now. You and I were talking about this about an hour before the show tonight. You and I both spoke at the Countercurrents Conference last fall in Atlanta, and I'm very hopeful our people will have to suffer more. That's something that I said in my address, and our people will have to go through a little bit more pain before they will become what they need to be. But at the same time, as I mentioned with Mark, I mean, nobody could have foreseen the fall of the Soviet Union. This was, again, a cliche. It happened very gradually and then all at once, the Muslim occupation of Spain, and we could bring forth many, many more examples.
Yes.
But this, I guess, just comes down to, are you a glasses half full or glasses half empty type of person?
Right.
I am a happy warrior. I do believe we're going to turn this around because it is a very degenerate society, and that cannot endure, I don't think. But this goes back to another, is the darkest hour just before dawn, or is the darkest hour just before the lights go out completely?
right. My talk can be read, by the way, on VDare. If you look back a few weeks, it was posted on VDare, so people can read it, and they'll be able to see it for free in a couple of weeks, I think.
Well, so what was your final take on the conference in Stalin?
It was a delightful conference. And, you know, if any of your listeners get a chance, you know, it's very much worth coming to a Skansa Forum. If you get the chance, there will be another one probably next year. We don't know where it'll be yet. That's under discussion, but it's worth the money and the time to get over there. It's an amazing experience. I've spoken at a couple of them. I spoke at one in Stockholm a few years ago, and this was my second.
Frode Midjord's a great leader for our people in Europe, and what he's done there, both in media and with his events is remarkable. And Roger, this is actually something before we move on to sexual utopia in Stockholm. Now, was Stockholm the second stop on your tour? You went from Estonia to Sweden?
Yes, it was. Yeah, I only spent about 3 or 4 days there, but we had a wonderful event attended by about 50 people to hear me and two other speakers talk about feminism and the sexual revolution. Feminism has been very powerful in Sweden. It's maybe the most feminist country in the world. So, you know, they have a lot of experience with that. And my talk is up at Countercurrents, and I understand you're going to post it as well. So I encourage people to take a look at what I had to say.
But this was
I
your
think the book is doing very well. Had a lot.
Well,
of
it has to be. It has to be. I mean, sexual utopia and power, which. Look, Roger, I mean, you're a contributing editor to the Occidental Quarterly. I mean, you have...
Yes.
You really are, and I loved what somebody wrote in one of their reviews of Sexual Utopia and Power. I wish I had it pulled up right now, but I'm paraphrasing, and I don't remember who it was, and I'm just stabbing at this, but it just said that as an independent scholar, you are basically... the Holy Grail. I mean, you're the one that people would aspire to be in terms of an independent scholar who has risen up and created a name for himself and his signature issue, which I guess Sexual Utopia and Power, this really the Bible with regards to radical feminism and how sexual habits and hypergamy and so on and so forth affect our culture and society, has really made a name for yourself. And that, when did the book originally come out?
The book came out in 2015. The essays go back as far as, I think, 2006, the original essay, Sexual Utopia and Power, was published. And translations now exist in German and Finnish, as well as the new Swedish one.
So that's what's so interesting to me, is that you started writing about this in the early mid-2000s. The book gets published in 2015, and here we are now on June the 24th, 2023, and you're celebrating the Swedish translation of this book that was written 8 years ago. I mean, that is something to be celebrated, and that is quite remarkable.
Yes, yes, yes. I'm very happy about
it. And good for you for that.
Well,
I'm lauding you. You know, all you have to do is just sit there and receive it. But no, this is good because it is such an important topic. So you give your talk in Estonia, and then from there you do a little holiday, and then you're on to your next professional appearance in Sweden. You're in Stockholm, which is this – I mean, people – I don't think if you don't know much about Stockholm, it's really like an island.
Weimar, Germany.
Well, there's yes, that.
Yes, it is.
I was talking more about the geographical makeup, but
it's a beautiful city, but where the hotel where I was staying, they were having this drag show in the evening, you know. I didn't attend, but it was there, you know. There's a lot of that kind of stuff in
Stockholm. Well, you know, I went to the Donald Trump, the first, well, I guess the only Donald Trump inauguration. He's run a couple of times, but the Donald Trump inauguration, Jared Taylor and I had press passes to the inauguration, and Jared was my plus one, and it was the day after that they had the pink hat protest or whatever that was.
Yes.
So. Yeah, you never know what's going on in these Western nations. But before we get to your talk about the newly minted and printed Swedish translation of your magnum opus, Sexual Utopia and Power, what would you say are the differences in culture and in attitudes? Because, again, what we're doing right now, folks, is sort of an inverse of our March Around the World series, where we have exclusively European guests or guests from Australia or abroad, Canada, outside of the United States during the month of March Around the World. This is sort of an inverse of that. We're having American guests on last week and tonight that have been in Europe and are sharing their observations from these conferences. But what would you say are the differences in attitudes and in trends and just your general observations on this trip and this trip alone from Estonia and Sweden?
Mm-hmm. Well, Sweden is, as I say, it is a very feminist country. People are afraid to criticize feminism publicly in Sweden. It's like, you know, it's just taken for granted that it's an entirely true and positive thing. It's taken over the Swedish churches, and it finds unusual expression in Swedish law and everything. In my talk, I mentioned that in Sweden, they have a law that it's legal for a woman to work as a prostitute, but it's illegal for the man to hire her services. Now, and I've talked about, you know, this does not make any sense. When you want to stop a practice, you go after the supply side, like with drugs. You don't go after the individual user so much. You go after the dealers. And in the case of a vice like prostitution, women are the supply. So countries that are serious about getting rid of prostitution, they go after the prostitutes, not the customers. But in Sweden, it's the other way around. which makes you think that, you know, they're not really interested in stopping prostitution. They're more interested in simply punishing men. All the laws have this rather obvious anti-male bias in Sweden. Swedish women are also very heavily involved in bringing immigrants into the country. They often take immigrants as boyfriends. To a certain extent, the immigration and the refugee program is like a young boyfriend program for Swedish spinsters. So I talked about that a little while. It's the cutting edge of gender maladaptive behavior in the West is Sweden. So I was particularly happy to see my book come out in a Swedish translation.
Well, who was the person or group or organization behind that?
It's called the Logik Forlag, which is means logic publishers. They're a nationalist publisher, and they're very well run. They publish a lot of other things. They've been distributing my book in English in the past. They distributed it in Sweden in English, and they just brought out this translation. And they publish a lot of other wonderful titles, you know, like Estonia or any other country. Sweden's got has a very rich history that most Americans don't know much about. And so they publish a lot in Swedish history and all kinds of stuff like that. You know, the Swedish nationalism even has its own history, very different from our patriotic movements.
We're going to take a quick break, and we're back with the one and only Roger Devlin. Right after this, we have covered his stop in Estonia. Now we are talking about his stop in Stockholm, Sweden, this almost island city, if you don't know the geographic tendencies. But we'll be right back.
Informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News. I'm Jerry Barmash. A group of mercenary soldiers had been advancing toward Moscow before its leader reportedly agreed to stand down on Saturday. Military analyst Mike Lyons says the facts from this would-be coup are minimal but important.
For all that's happened, Vladimir Putin is weaker today than he was when this started. And if that's the only thing Prigozhin wanted to get out of this, even sacrificing himself now as he's been exiled to Belarus, maybe that is going to, from his perspective, feel like it's been worth it.
The White House says President Biden is monitoring developments after briefly delaying a scheduled trip to Camp David. Former President Trump says he will contribute to the legal fund for January 6th defendants. He spoke at a private event Thursday hosted by a group raising funds for those charged in the 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. In a video of the speech posted on social media, Trump said, quote, "You have great people and they've been made to pay a price." He also made claims that BLM and Antifa were behind the riot. The support ship that launched the final dive of the Titan submersible returned to Canada.
The Polar Prince arrived at St. John's, Newfoundland, with its flags flown at half-mast. Experts believe that all five passengers aboard the small submersible died instantly due to an implosion as they descended toward the Titanic wreck site. Canadian officials have officially launched a safety investigation. After a search spanning nearly 5 days, search crews finally located fragments of the Titan on the ocean floor last Thursday. I'm John Schaefer.
Former Vice President Mike Pence is calling for a federal 15-week abortion ban as the U.S. marks 1 year since the end of Roe versus Wade. The 2024 presidential candidate spoke Saturday at the Faith and Freedom Conference in Washington. U.S. intelligence agencies are still divided on where COVID-19 came from. That's according to a new report from the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. This is USA News.
Okay, I'm talking funny because I'm in the witness protection program. I have too much credit card debt and I don't want people to find me.
Okay, I'm just kidding. We're going to talk about credit card debt. Right, those plastic things that we all have in our wallet. Are you in your 50s or 60s and you're still carrying around a mound of credit card debt? Wouldn't it be nice to start banking that money and save a little money for retirement down the road? We help people restructure their credit card debt all the time. We show people how they can get out of credit card debt debt in months, not years. Listen, you'll be carrying around credit card debt for the rest of your life unless you deal with it right now. We offer a free consultation so you can learn how you can finally wipe out your credit card debt and start saving money. Give us a free call right now.
Call Debt Solutions Network now. 866-451-3328. 866-451-3328. That's 866-451-3328.
Welcome back, everybody. It's how can you call this work when you get to come in and talk to people like Mark Weber and Roger Devlin, two men I'm honored to be able to call them friends, but two men that I have the utmost respect for their work and their character and the way that they go about their business. And it's just a wonderful thing. 19 years on the radio doing it like this. I mean, these are the people that I wanted to interview. We could have done the traditional talk radio thing. We could have read press releases from the GOP or Conservative Incorporated and talked to people who were all saying the same things, reading off the same script. Or we could talk to people who are actually interesting, people who have gone a different path, people who have risked something, people who have contributed something. And that's what we've done. And for 19 years, you've made it possible, ladies and gentlemen, and I thank you for that. And we're talking about Roger Devlin's book. I actually owe Roger a debt of gratitude here, and I have thanked him privately. Now I will thank him publicly for reviewing the book that I contributed the opening chapter to, The Honorable Cause, A Free South. And he wrote a review for American Renaissance that was quite obviously excellent. I mean, it was something written by Roger Devlin, but I had told Jared that I had contributed this opening chapter, and then the next thing I know, there's a review by Roger Devlin. I didn't even know that it had been assigned or that it was forthcoming, and this is a book that has been reviewed by quite a few people, including Clyde Wilson, many reviewers from abroad, Remy Tremblay of Canada, Sasha Rossmuller of Germany, Dr. Tom Sunich of Croatia. But Roger, your review of the book was very, very good, and I appreciate you for taking the time to not only read it, but to write about it.
You can find that on the back pages, I guess, of American Renaissance still. That was a delightful book. I hope it has an influence.
Well, thank you for saying that. It has done well on Amazon, and I'm sure thanks to the assist from you, amongst others. But I'll tell you, I only bring that up to say this. I have never been a part of a book, my own book in 2010 or this book, that has been translated. Here we are now 8 years after the original publication of Sexual Utopia and Power, celebrating another translation of it. Third translation. I mean, that is some staying. That is some shelf life, pun intended. And here at the close of your speech, which the transcript of which will be posted to thepoliticalcesspool.org this week. It can be found at countercurrents.com already. But you write that adaptive sexuality will return one way or another because it's nature's way. But there are no guarantees that our own descendants will be the ones practicing it. And I don't care very much what sexual or family practices will prevail in future Muslim Swedistan. My concern is with my own people and civilization, of which the Swedish people are a part. So here you are in Sweden. What, Roger, two questions. Well, first of all, let me ask you this. I'm going to ask you in a moment what gives us hope, because that's sort of the theme of the night. But what is it about your book and the topic that your book is addressing that has given it so much staying power?
Well, I don't know. I did write it in part. I was inspired by what I saw as the weaknesses of the typical conservative movement treatment of feminism and the sexual revolution, which is mostly dominated by the male protective instinct, really. I mean, there's sort of an unwritten rule that the blame for all of these things has to go on men exclusively. And so one of the things that makes my book different is I showed how the female sexual nature plays into the sexual revolution, and it wasn't simply a matter of wicked men persuading foolish women to give them sex outside of marriage. There's a specifically sexual female sexual revolution that can be seen, like in the writings of, you know, in Cosmo and the writings of Helen Gurley Brown and all that. That's very different from the male view, because men and women are so different. And I wanted to make that clear to a male audience primarily, although I've discovered I've been delightfully surprised how many women really seem to enjoy my book. And there were lots of women in attendance at the Swedish event, you know, women who were active, like in trying to limit the damage of feminism in the Swedish church and in Swedish society.
When left unattended, I mean, it can go either way. But do you believe that innately and naturally the women want to be put under authority? And that may be what's drawing people to the message,
they want
this message
both.
Of truth?
I mean, that's like asking, you know, do children want to be put under authority? Yes and no. There's a side that wants to do just whatever they want to do, you know. That's part of human nature. But they work best when women are in the long run happiest when they are embedded in a family and a community, and as for that matter, do men as well. So, you know,
I've said that publicly. I mean, most men want to be led too, but that's a little bit different than the way women need to be led.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And as I said, that adaptive sexuality, the way it works, you know, family, strong families, it's going to make a return, but we got to make sure that it's our own people and that we don't get, you know, substituted out. So we're working against the clock in places like Sweden. We gotta put our own house in order at the same time as we protect our societies from mass immigration.
Before we go to your third speech on this tour in another European capital, let me ask you this before the time runs out on this segment, and we ask this of Mark Weber too. I mean, we see the trends, we see the trajectory. What gives us hope? Where can we invest some level of hope in right now in this dark hour?
Well, as regards sexual issue, I got a lot of hope just from the amount of interest that I found in Sweden. As I say, it's a country that's been hit very badly, worse than perhaps any other single Western country by the feminist revolution. And we got a big crowd, and there were two other speakers, not just me, but it was like an all-day event. We were talking about these problems and how to restore healthy courtship and marriage and family life, and they were all with me. A lot of people in Sweden are unhappy with the way things are, and they're doing something about it. And the translation of my book is just, you know, for them, that's just a part of that story. Their own story of doing what they have to do to save Sweden for their own posterity.
Well, let me ask you this, Roger, because we have about a minute remaining this segment, and then we're going to get to your third and final speaking stop on this European tour that you had. But if you're a young man, let's just say you're a young man, you can live anywhere in the world. Where do you want to live if it comes, if the question is finding a mate in terms of attractiveness and in terms of culture? Do you want to go to Estonia? Do you want to go to Sweden?
Estonia has been protected. Communism actually protected Estonia from
so does
the very unusual and difficult Estonian language. They're not as subject to, you know, the influence of English language media there, and that has protected them as well. So probably Estonia would be a better place to look for a mate. I saw lots of women with children, you know, more than you do in Sweden when I was in Estonia, you know, families out together.
All right, very good. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. If you're a gentleman, I guess, if you're young and can move abroad, that may be a place to look. Because I brought this up with Mark. I mean, Estonia occupies a very fascinating, to me, corner of Europe. I mean, it's a very obscure corner of Europe that's sort of different than everywhere else. I mean, what would you say to that? About,
yes, it is.
About
yes.
What about its geographic?
Very un-Soviet, very different from Russia, too. You know, it was ruled by Russia for so long, but it looks totally different. This is something Solzhenitsyn noticed when he lived there briefly in the 1960s. It was very un-Soviet. He felt like he was abroad, even though he was still in the Soviet Union. It does look like a Western European country in many ways.
Well, does it have any commonality with Scandinavia? I mean, because it's right there just below Finland, but north of all the rest of Europe.
Mostly with Finland. The languages are related, and there have been a lot of, since the fall of the Soviet Union, there have been a lot of like joint projects between Finland and Estonia. It's something that you do notice. There are, you know, a fair number of Finnish tourists. So, yeah, there is a common cultural basis there and a common linguistic basis.
But still fascinating because, I mean, you can talk to people all the time. Oh, I went to France. I went to London. I went to Australia. I went to Canada. I mean, how many people have went to Estonia? I mean, not many. I mean,
right.
Just a different kind of place.
Frodi chose the venue very carefully. He said he wanted people, first-time visitors, to see Europe at its best. And in a way, Estonia is Europe at its best in some ways.
That medieval aesthetic, I mean, we go back to that. I've mentioned it a handful of times already tonight, but very fascinating and interesting. Well, Roger's been on. He's addressed his address in Estonia and also in Sweden, but he made another stop, and we're going to talk about that next.
The Honorable Cause of Free South is a collection of 12 essays written by Southern nationalist authors. The book explores topics such as what is the Southern nation, what is Southern nationalism, and how can we achieve a free and independent Dixie. The Honorable Cause answers questions on our own terms. The book invites readers to understand for themselves why a free and independent Dixie is both preferable and possible. The book pulls in some of the biggest producers of pro-South content, including James Edwards, the host and creator of The Political Cesspool, and Wilson Smith, author of Charlottesville Untold, Arkansas congressional candidate and activist Neil Kumar, host and creator of the Dissident Mama podcast, Rebecca Dillingham, author of A Walk in the Park, My Charlottesville Story, Identity Dixie's Patrick Martin, and yours truly, Michael Hill, founder and president of the League of the South, as well as several other authors. The Honorable Cause is available now at Amazon.com.
In Message 1, we said that Satan, the father of lies, John 8:44, gave the left evil, spiritual power the more they used the lies. The political left today is the beast. Now the Bible confirms that the dragon gave him, the beast, his power, Revelation 13:2. The extra evil spiritual power that comes from the beast by their lying is what accounts for the string of the leftist criminals in the government that have never yet been prosecuted. It also explains why American capitalists support communism in the 21st century. Note 1. That behavior of capitalists was predicted by Vladimir Lenin, a cell of the beast. Note 2. Henry Ford was a capitalist, and he would have never gone communist. The difference between Ford and the present-day end-time capitalists is that Ford was born and educated in the Kingdom of Christ, 19th century America, the New Jerusalem, Revelation 21.
Always great to talk to Mark Weber and Roger Devlin. We have the chance to talk to both of them tonight. Roger Devlin, for one more segment, I got to share you, ladies and gentlemen, a little bit of behind-the-scenes information here. When I give a speech, I write a speech about once every 3 years, and it's sort of like a band that travels from city to city. It's the same speech, but it's a different city, so that audience has never heard it before. And so I give the same speech from time to time to different audiences. But Roger didn't do that on his most recent European tour, and that's something that flummoxes me to an extent. I mean, Roger, you gave three different speeches in three different,
different
locales.
Subjects.
And three different subjects, three different locations. And you didn't do that. You didn't play all the hits. You played new songs every time. And we move now from Estonia to Stockholm, Sweden, and now to another European capital where you addressed the...
I should mention before we get into the countercurrent conference that there was about a week and a half of free time that I had between the second and third events. And I went to Budapest, Hungary. Now, Budapest is a city that I saw for the first time not too long after the collapse of communism. I was there as a young man in the early 90s. It was still rather poor. It's totally different now. It's very prosperous under Viktor Orban's government. There are a lot of people in the American press trying to convince you that he's some kind of dictator. It's absurd. People can say whatever they want in Hungary, probably more than we can in America. And it's just very prosperous. You can see it just walking along the boulevards everywhere, restaurants and cafes crowded with people. It's attracting a lot of foreign tourists, even, you know, some people who think the way we do. There are even actually refugees from, like, Western Europe, like Frenchmen who are settling in Hungary because they want their kids to grow up around Europeans instead of, you know, the people the French government is bringing in now. So that was a very interesting experience.
Well, I mean, you know, we keep hearing about Orban being, you know, a guy that we have some common interest with. I mean, where would you say that?
Yes.
In your experience, Roger, and I know that's all that you could speak to, but in your experience, where are people doing the best in Europe? I think that's a good question.
That Hungary might be a good choice, actually. Estonia's doing well. Estonia, unfortunately, elected a little bit left of center government recently, but it's still doing well. But Hungary, Orban's party has a 2/3 majority. Unlike the Poles, who supposedly have this right-wing government, they're keeping out mass immigration. The Poles have just decided to open the floodgates and let 400,000 people in.
I talked about that with Jared. Jared was on with me on the May 27th broadcast because he, like you and like Mark, had planned a multi-city and nation tour of Europe. I mean, your tours intersected at one point and then deviated at others. But Jared, you know, of course, was banned at his first stop. As soon as he got off the plane at his first
by the
call, he was sent back home. By the Poles. And that's the thing. And I talked to Jared about this when he appeared in May. He told us about all the places he was going to go to and what he would have talked about and what the people he was going to meet. But it was the Poles. And the Poles, it was just, you know, it was an interesting thing. It was just, you hear the Poles are sort of right of center, and I believe that their own national government elected Jesus Christ as their president or the Lord, something like the Lord of their country. And then, but they're sending home Jared Taylor. I mean, that doesn't really add up.
That's right. There is a powerful left still in Poland. They're not in charge of the whole country, but they're still very influential. That's not so much the case in Hungary. Hungary is probably the best governed country in Europe right now.
They got a real border,
Orban,
do they not?
Has like a 2/3. Yes, it does. Yeah, they built a border fence. They had a brief migrant crisis a few years ago. There were, you know, you may have seen pictures of Budapest train stations being overrun by Middle Easterners, but they got that under control very quickly and built a fence, and the country is just prospering mightily. It's totally different from what I saw as a young man a generation ago, shortly after the collapse of communism.
All right, very good. So, I mean, it looks like we still have... Anybody
One
can
more.
Always find fault with somebody, but yes, I mean, for good or bad, it looks like Hungary is a place where that's a standard for our people right now. Now, let's talk about the countercurrents event. Now, we're spending the least amount of time on this because last week, the program director, Cyan, who we all know and love, sent us the very talented young man, Austin, to share with us his reflections on the countercurrent spring event at another European capital in Europe. But you were there too, Roger, and this was the third stop and the third different speech. Now, share with us the topic of your address as well as your takeaways from this conference, not only the topic of the conference, but the people in the city at which you were at.
Yes. Well, we got about, although it was a private invitation-only event, we got 40 people come, many of them from quite distant locales. You know, a lot of Americans were there. And I want to say, if you have any Countercurrents fans among your audience, it's not that difficult to get invited to such events if you are interested. Just, you know, sending a small monthly donation enough to get behind the paywall on the Countercurrents site is enough. You will get invitations to one American retreat and one European retreat every year. That's the plan. There's going to be an American retreat this fall, and there'll be another European meeting probably next spring. It's already under discussion. But anyway, this one that was just 2 or 3 weeks ago, it was a delightful event. I myself spoke about Alain de Benoist on populism. My talk has been posted at Countercurrents, and the video, the actual video of me delivering the talk, was just posted at Countercurrents like today or yesterday. And this is a book that I translated, so that's what Greg asked me to speak about. And I've read now a number of titles on populism, and Alain de Benoist is on a whole other level. He'll teach you know, anybody a lot that they don't know about the history of populism, about another one of his themes is the fading importance of the old right versus left distinction. So I basically just summarized some of his themes from this important book. It's called The Populist Moment. It was published in French a few years ago. My English translation is due to come out in a month or two from Countercurrents Publishing. So you'll be able to read the book itself soon. But it's a wonderful analysis. Populism is not really an ideology. It's not something that can be definitely located on the right-left spectrum or anything. It's a kind of a configuration of forces that occasionally recurs when what the major parties are offering the public does not correspond to any public demand. And that's been the case now for a generation. You know, three-quarters of Americans are opposed to mass immigration, and yet there's this tacit agreement between the Republicans and the Democrats not to talk about it and never to run a candidate that actually gives Americans a choice on the issue. Donald Trump took the Republicans by surprise. They never wanted a candidate who was talking about even so much as illegal immigration, still less anybody who talked about building a wall on the border. But as soon as Trump made that speech, he immediately shot up to the top of the polls because he was meeting a political demand that the main parties were not. And that is the characteristic of populism. It's when the powerful are out of sync with ordinary people and don't give them any choice that they're interested in making. And that's true in a lot of Western countries now, including Alain de Benoist's native France. The last presidential election, 85% of Frenchmen polled said they would be disappointed in the result no matter who gets elected. They didn't like any of the candidates. And that's very common across the West now. A generation ago, you had like families voting for the right or voting for the left across generations, and now people will vote for a different party every time, or just abstain from voting, you know, because the big parties just don't offer the public what they're interested in anymore. So that is the nature of populism. It's not an ideology. It's a political configuration involving an out-of-touch elite and an angry citizenry.
Roger, I got to ask you one more thing, and thank you for that breakdown. I want to read. I found it in the last commercial break. The Countercurrents review. I don't know if it's a review. It's the testimonials of sexual utopia and power. And here's just a few.
Oh,
love
okay.
And sex have never been confusing. To me. I have Roger Devlin to thank for that. Also, this from a reviewer, Dr. Devlin, this is what I was stabbing at earlier. Dr. Devlin is perhaps the best role model there is for independent scholars on the right. His writings can be found on nearly every website the mainstream fears. Now, that is, I think, one of the most incredible compliments that one can be paid. You're an independent scholar, and you're everywhere.
Yes. I was very pleased by that. It was his credit to a Benjamin Villarroel, which, if you don't know it, was actually the late Martin Rojas, who worked for Jared for so many years.
I did not know
that. He wrote those words, and yes, I didn't know it at the time. But yes, that was his assessment, and yes, I was very honored to see him to say that about me.
And then here on the show tonight, but in other compliments as well. Get the book Sexual Utopia and Power. It's a Countercurrents publication. You can get it through them and elsewhere. We want to thank both Mark.
You can't get it at Amazon. It's been banned from Amazon, but I think you can get it from Barnes & Noble and certainly from Countercurrents.
All right, let me ask you this, Roger. One question remaining. If you could live anywhere that you visited on your most recent tour of Europe, where would it be?
Oh, I liked the last city I visited, which I'm not supposed to say what it is, but it was a delightful town, and so I encourage anybody who has any interest in Europe to get involved with Countercurrents and maybe try to come to our next retreat next year. It'll be somewhere in some other lovely place in Europe, I'm sure.
All right. For Mark Weber and Roger Devlin, I'm signing off. No, we got another hour remaining, and you don't want to miss it. But I want to thank both Mark and Roger. Thank you, Roger. Talk to you again soon. We'll see you at Amarin and VDare.